Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
This week and last week, we were talking about farmer Les Jones, who is in a very, very grave way. He owns a barren farm in northern western New South Wales. Last week, he let us know that in about a month, he's going to shoot all of his stock, 1,200 of his starving sheep. He's going to bury them in a mass grave. He says the sheep are living skeletons, so emaciated that we can't even use them to feed ourselves unless we eat soup every day. Well, last week we spoke with Brian Egan, the founder of Aussie Helpers, who is in touch with Les Jones. And yeah, the story was a big story in the Sunday papers, particularly the Sunday Telegraph, the other day. And since then, the Joneses have been inundated with calls offering help. But that's one farm. It's not enough. And Les couldn't bring himself to talk to the media yesterday, but late last night I spoke to his wife, Laura. And she feels very, very grateful to the Aussies who have reached out and said, we'll help you get some feed onto this farm. But that's a stopgap, isn't it? That's a band-aid. We've got to try and irrigate Australia. We've got to try and water Australia. There's plenty of water. Water's not the problem. It's just that it's wasted. And when you look at the amount of money that the government gives in foreign aid and gives to people who are on welfare that shouldn't be getting it, spends on public housing, people who shouldn't be in it, the amount of political rorts that our politicians are entitled to, we should be doing more. More than just offering farmers who are at the end of their tether, seriously the end of their tether, offering them just low-interest loans. Well, I'll let Laura explain it to you. As I said, I spoke to Laura Jones, the wife of farmer Les Jones, late last night. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Luke. How are you?
More importantly, how are you?
Oh, over the last 48 hours, Luke, I have been overwhelmed with the generosity of the people of this nation.
Tell me what's happened.
The word has got out that we farmers, not just my husband and I and our family and our farm, but all farmers around the place, around our nation, are in deep, dire trouble.
The country has always had drought.
Correct.
What is making this particular drought so tough?
It just won't rain where it's needed. And no one on this planet can make it rain for us.
No.
We know that. But we've had no help, or very, very little help.
Tell me, what help have you received from the government? And this is before all this was made public. What help is there?
About 6 to 8 weeks ago, the government, federal and state governments, have offered us $50,000 loans, low interest loans, over a 7-year period, and only to buy fodder for our stock. Only, it's not transport subsidy payments. It's not for any other thing except to buy in fodder for our stock.
Can you believe how much money we waste in this country? Foreign aid, building bridges in Vietnam, NBNs that are going to be out of date by the time it's all finished, massive unemployment and welfare payments, and yet our farmers, all you're offered is a low-interest loan over 7 years. It's disgraceful.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Luke. And, I mean, I have a son. My eldest son is 39 in less than 3 weeks' time. He has fought through the Defence Force. He's a Navy man. Mm. He's now an Navy man. Mm. He was medically discharged in February of last year. He fought for 17 years to protect this country to the end. And yet he put on Facebook yesterday when he saw our faces in the paper that he is disgusted with the nation and the powers that be because we are not getting the help that we are needed.
What help has come your way over the last 4 days?
Oh, well, I've had people ringing from all over the nation, old people, young people, middle-aged people, mums, dads, pensioners even, that we don't even know, but they sure know us because of what has now been spread across the land with the media and the newspapers and places like yourselves. It's just mind-blowing.
We found out on Sunday that you, in a couple of weeks, and your hard-working husband, Les, will have to shoot up to 1,200 starving sheep. You're going to have to bury them in a mass grave on your farm. Is that still the case?
I hope not, Luke. I pray to God that it isn't, because without the generosity of the people around the nation have just absolutely thrown everything at us. And it's not just us per se. It's all farmers that are in dire straits that have got starving stock on their land.
The photo that got me was the picture of the orphan lambs sitting on rugs in front of the fireplace.
Yes. My husband, Les, is still feeding those very same lambs. Their nightly feed, they're just about ready to wrap it up for the night, put them all back to bed in front of the fire and say goodnight to them, hopefully until 5 o'clock in the morning.
Please let us know what we can do to help, but it's not just you. There are farmers everywhere.
No.
And we should be, all that water that comes out of the sky in far north Queensland during the wet season, it's all wasted. It must break your heart.
It does. It does, Luke, because, I mean, when my daughter was in her last year of primary school, it was a little town called Mullally, near where we live. She did a project for her principal teacher those years back. Now she's in year 9 now of school, in high school at Coonabarabran. Mm. That year she did this project. It was on the infrastructure. If she had a wish list and a magic wand, what would she do with that magic wand? Her wish would be that right around the country would have access to water pumped right across this land from places like North Queensland, the Northern Territory, where they have oodles of rain every year.
Yeah, I know. And we're not making dams. We're not making dams. And, you know, places like Dubai don't have water restrictions. It's possible. But no, we have an NBN that'll be completely superseded by 5G by the time it's finished. Billions and billions of dollars completely wasted. And here you are. Listen to this, folks. This is Laura Jones, who up until a couple of days ago was faced with the reality that they were going to have to shoot all their stock, 1,200 starving sheep. Sheep looking like skeletons, emaciated. Dear, oh dear. Well, look, let's hope that you've turned a corner. But buying feed is Band-Aid. What we need to do is drought-proof this country. And it is possible. It just is going to take some initiative and some vision. That's what we really need. I thank you so much for your time, Laura. We're in your corner.
Thank you so much, Luke. I appreciate your time.
All right, then. Let's stay in touch, hey?
Okay, thank you so much. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Adam, hello.
Good morning, Luke. How are you?
I'm absolutely deadly, mate. How are you?
Mate, I couldn't be better.
Okay, let's talk. What's on your mind?
Oh, mate, I just want to have a chat about the parents at sporting games.
Yeah,
as in 2009, I still do it now. I referee for our local competition.
Oh, you're exactly who I want to talk to. What sport is it, by the way?
Rugby league.
Okay, and what age group do you referee?
Now I do reserve grade to 19s and 18s. But back in 2009, I was doing like mini mods.
Okay.
From sixes to say 12s.
You've seen it all then.
Yes.
Okay, tell me about it.
2009. It was an under 12s football game. It was in the end of the game. I honestly can't remember who won the game, but as I was leaving the grounds, and all I heard was, ref, you know, you suck. And next minute, I hit the ground. Someone threw a rock at the back of my head.
You're kidding.
No, as in it was, I didn't wake up until the back of the ambulance. It wasn't until I came to, and I had a paramedic just standing over me.
You're kidding. What age was this again?
Under 12.
Under 12s, and you would assume, the voice, do you remember the voice? Was it an adult?
I honestly can't remember. I know I heard something, and it wasn't until someone said that, I heard someone say, ref, you suck, but they couldn't. The person who heard that couldn't tell whether or not that was the person that threw the rock.
Did anyone witness this? Was there anyone arrested?
No, as in it still hasn't been solved today.
Wow.
It wasn't until one of the parents, they were coming to their cars, and I just hit the ground, and it wasn't until one of the parents with one of the kids players, you know, found me on the laying down.
So no one saw it?
Well, no. I can't say that no one saw it, but no one's come forward to say.
How long ago did this happen?
2009, so almost 10 years.
And to this day, no one's been held accountable?
No.
Wow.
Even 3 weeks before that, it was an incident of an uncle of one of the children at a different ground. He was drinking his own beer at 8:30 in the morning, watching under-9s play.
Wow.
As in, it wasn't the clubs that were selling it. He brought his own, his own little Esky, you know, and a lot of the parents didn't know how to take it. It wasn't until the club itself found out what he was doing and asked him to leave.
What time in the morning? 8 o'clock?
8:30 for the under-9s. So,
8:30 in the morning, he's an uncle of one of the players and he's drinking beer.
Yeah.
So he's got a problem.
Oh, well, as in... People, and many people say that, you know, he doesn't care if it's 5 in the afternoon, 2 in the morning, you know. If it calls, he calls.
Was he being aggressive?
No, it was just, only the reports where he was just stumbling all over the place. He even walked on the field a couple of times, got heading to the toilets, and it was torso behind him, not in front of him. And that's what brought it to the attention of the club.
Hang on, he's going to the toilet, but he was going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And he was crossing the field.
It's crossing the field, and that's what brought it to the attention of the club.
While the game was on?
While the game was on.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit of a giveaway.
Yeah. So, you know, he mentally he probably might fit into the game, but not physically. So, as in, so we don't know the person that threw the rock, you know, was intoxicated or just was cranky because one of my decisions. You know, I wish I had that chance to ask the person why did you throw it, you know, because it led to 2 skull fractures and a bleed. So, you know,
You could have been killed.
Well, as in, I went home, the hospital cleared me, stayed there for about 2 days in base hospital. And it wasn't until I got home, I was having massive, massive headaches. I was slightly blurry, couldn't go to work, and I went back.
You had concussion, mate. You had concussion. You should have gone back to hospital. Did they do a scan?
I did, as in there's nothing on the first scan. I was in hospital for 2 days. I went home for about maybe a day and a half, and I got really unwell. I went back, and the doctor sent me for another scan, and it came back that I had a small clot in the back of my head. I was in there for a week, and then probably 3 days later, I was transported down to Brisbane.
This is 2009. Tell me this, Adam. Do you still referee?
I do indeed.
Didn't put you off?
No.
And somewhere out there, there's a gutless bastard at an under-12s game?
Yep, that's it.
At an under-12s game, it's thrown a rock at a referee. What's going on? unbelievable. And it's people like you that keep junior sport going. I'm tipping you do it for free. Are you a volunteer?
All juniors, I'm a volunteer. It's just the seniors that...
The seniors get a fee, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Adam, thank you for your story. I'm impressed that you've kept refereeing. It's so important, and I'm just so sorry that that happened to you.
Oh, mate, they're terrible people in the world, but you can't let them control it.
Tell me, the screaming and the yelling and the abusive behaviour from the sidelines, does it happen all the time?
Not in every game, but I do get a lot of kids come up saying, "Sir, I don't want to play anymore."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a referee, I can't really, you know, I can't say, well, okay, go off. I can have a chat to the coach at half time, but then, you know, at this one particular time, the kid was afraid that his dad might have a go at him.
Listen
to this. So I just told the young kid, I said, well, why don't you have a go? Why don't you hop out in the wing and, you know, and have a try out there? So, you know, he wasn't in, still on the field, still in there, but he wasn't actually directly in the line. And at half time, when we came back into the second half, I asked him, so what do you want to play? He goes, I want to play soccer.
There you are. You listen to this. This is exactly what I've been saying. Can I ask you one more question, Adam? Because you've had a lot to do with junior sport. Do you think we need weight for age?
In what I'm seeing, yes, I do, honestly.
Do you have it where you are at Rockhampton?
No, we don't have weight for age. It has been talked about in the junior meetings. But it's very strongly for up here. Due to the fact that we get some really big kids, and when a small kid gets underneath him, as in the small kid puts all his heart into it, tackles him around the legs, but all it takes is for that big kid to fall in the wrong position of the small kid, and all that weight is coming down on the smaller kid.
Yeah. So you believe in weight for age. Well, there you are. You've been a very interesting first caller, Adam, and it's nice to know that you're listening to us through Triple M in Rockhampton. Thank you for your call, and congratulations on the work you do with junior sport.
Oh, mate, I love it every day.
G'day, you, Baz.
G'day, Luke.
How are you, champion?
Sorry. No worries, mate. I'm sorry to say, Luke, the third world's here, mate. Get used to it.
Only because we let it.
Exactly. Well, they came in after the 1996 election where they tripled the immigration intake. A lot of them came from the third world, and those people have settled here now. And unfortunately, Luke, that's the way it is, mate.
The trouble is these young men running wild, and no one's admitting that there's a gang problem in Melbourne. There is. There obviously is. I've got people ringing me and telling me. I mean, I read the newspaper. I watch the news. There's a problem.
The bullets, Luke.
Sorry, Barry.
Load up with rubber bullets, mate, like 10cc said.
10cc, yeah.
Yeah, rubber bullets, Luke. You don't have to get near them, mate. Just hit them with the rubber bullets. They'll go down like a ton of bricks.
But the thing I want to know is why more of them aren't being arrested. There was one party that got out of control where these people were actually throwing missiles at police.
I know. Hard to believe.
They were jumping on police vehicles and no one was arrested. How can that be?
Yeah. It reminds you of Black Hawk Down, doesn't it?
It is unbelievable. Now, the trouble is, you can't deport these kids because they were born here.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. It staggers me, Luke. Look, you know, for people around Australia, you know, one of the best road trips in Australia is Adelaide to Melbourne.
Yeah.
It's the shortest distance between two capital cities. And it's a great drive, there and back. You know, you've got your certain stops and everything. And Melbourne, you know, for people from Adelaide, yeah, Melbourne's this great big metropolis. You know, it's action-packed, it's pumping. There's always something to do, always something to see. It's you know, that and Sydney's Australia's big cities, and it's a great place to go. But, geez, Luke, from what I'm hearing, mate, it's starting to make you worry, you know, whether, you know, you really want to go.
Okay, look, this is a national radio show, but I think this is of national interest because it's a sad reflection on our immigration policy. Because a lot of these young men come from single-parent families where there's just mum, and she's struggling to make ends meet, and there's no discipline.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. I don't think we thought this through. I honestly don't think we thought this through. The place has gone wild.
Yeah, well, there's been no discipline in the school since the late 70s, Luke, and that's a reflection on society as we see it today. You know, we've had nearly 40 years, mate, of no discipline in the schools. You know yourself. If a police officer came across you doing something wrong, he'd give you a boot up the backside and send you on your way. See you again, mate, and you'll be heading off to the boys' home or something like that. That was enough to put the wind up your Luke. Not anymore. Until the cop where to go.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, and you know what, Luke? Talking about, you know, I heard the bloke talking about the NBN before, and I'm not defending anyone. I'm just going on about state and federal leadership. We are devoid of leadership in this country, Luke. It doesn't matter where you go, whatever state and at a federal level. We have no leadership. One phone call from Rupert the Bear to Malcolm Turnbull, Communications Minister, took fibre to the premise, turned it into fibre to the node because it was going to affect his pay TV subscriptions. So we went from what was supposed to be world's best NBN, fibre to the premise, to fibre to the node. We're still running on copper lines, thanks to one phone call from a very rich man to our now Prime Minister when he was Communications Minister.
That's a big call. That is a big call, but it's nowhere near what they wanted it to be. But it's going to cost billions. What Nat says, the official figure on the internet is $56 billion. My understanding is it's way more than that. And it's obsolete right now.
Yeah, exactly, Lou. And that's because of that phone call to Turnbull, then Communications Minister. He took that on, and now we have fibre to the node, which means it goes to your suburb and they run copper from there to your home. So, in other words, we're still running on 20th century technology.
And with 5G now, it's completely obsolete.
It's exactly. So, and another example of influenced by big business, very rich people. Well, we had a couple of people go screaming like little squealing pigs to Joe Hockey when he was treasurer. We now got GST on eBay and everything else online purchases. Then what about the time when all the illegal downloads and all this sort of stuff? Well, of course, there was a couple of big companies screamed to the government. We've now all the illegal download sites are blocked. And look at all the streaming companies that are suddenly becoming multi-billion dollar companies. They're gone from strength to strength to strength. Who's got shares in those companies, Luke?
Well, be careful. Be careful. I know where you're going, Barry. I know you're going. Barry, I want to ask you a question because I respect, because I like your opinion. And I love your passion.
Yeah, like you, Luke. Passionate Australian, mate. Love this country.
Okay. If somebody wants to migrate to Australia, I'm not talking about the, one of the many refugees that we take in. If somebody wants to migrate to Australia, what sort of questions should they be able to answer?
Well, for starters, they should be able to speak English. If you can't speak English, well, I mean, what the heck are we doing, Luke?
Okay, let's tick that. I'm going to write this down. English.
English,
okay,
first off.
Ticked off, go.
What's your knowledge on Australia? Local customs, you know, like public holidays, you know, Anzac Day, et cetera, et cetera. Just those sorts of things. Also laws. They should know laws. They should know things, general knowledge about Australia. They should have, Luke, if they want to come here, they should have done some research to know about the country and to know about its people. How long have we been here? Who was the first... the indigenous population, you know, with the, you know, the oldest continuous living culture on earth, settled by, well, not settled, but there was a
colonised,
made by, yeah, colonised by white settlers in 17, it was, you know, 1770 or whatever it was.
Well, 1770 was Captain Cook, 1788 was...
88 was, yep, was Philip. Yep, was, yep.
That's all important. That's all important, but Malcolm Turnbull and the immigration minister on Friday said that they want to smarten up Australia's immigration procedure. And they used the word in their press release, they used the word values. I'll get Nat to print it off for me again. It was that story we talked about on Friday, Nat, how they want Australian values to be taken into consideration when people want to migrate here. Now, that's the word I want us to think about right now. What are Australian values, Barry?
Yeah, well, for starters, obey the law. That's the majority value.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I'm going to take that as being said. You must obey the law. There's one law for all people. We must obey the law. But besides that, what does the word values mean?
Well, values for starters, Luke. You know, as you know, when we grew up, it was always, you help your mates out as such. Like if you work in a company, you work as a team because, you know, the old united we stand, divided we fall type thing.
Yeah. Okay. I said our culture. Now, if you are going to be offended by women wearing a bikini are in a public swimming pool, you shouldn't move here.
No. Geez, offended? Geez, Luke, mate, what a sight.
Well, there was a public swimming pool in Sydney. And owned by council, paid for by ratepayers. And there was a local group who took offence and didn't want their women to be sharing the swimming pool with men. So they had the swimming pool closed down 2 days out of seven for Muslim women only.
No, that's laughable.
Now, you see what I'm saying? If you don't want to share a swimming pool with a bloke, you've got to think twice about coming here because that's what we do.
It's not as if someone, you can't really, well, I mean, it is possible for attacks, but at the same time, there's swimming pool attendants, there's people around. It's not like you can go and do anything, you know, nasty. I just don't get it, Luke. It's very sad, mate. And, you know, I'd like yourself, Luke, I'm in my mid-50s, and I should be wishing I was in my mid-20s, mate. But to tell you the honest truth, Luke, the way Australia's going, I don't, mate.
Oh, that's a shame, because you're a passionate bloke. Barry, thanks for your call. Always good to talk to you. We'll catch up again.
Thanks, Luke. You take care, mate. Have a good night.
Yeah, see you later, mate. Bye-bye. John, g'day.
G'day, Luke. Well, I'm actually travelling through the central west of New South Wales at the moment, and I do that regularly. Mm. And I just, you know, it's very, very dry out here, Luke. There's not a dam on any of the properties out here that have even got a drop of water in them, you know. Mm-hmm. It's all... And just about every truck parking bay's got, you know, B-doubles and trucks loaded up with hay to supplement the feed and all that sort of stuff. But
do you want to know something, John?
Yeah.
And I'll play this interview with Laura Jones, the wife of poor old farmer Les Jones, who couldn't bring himself to speak. He's that upset and overwhelmed at the generosity of Australians. But she was telling me the drought relief that's offered by the government is a low-interest loan. That's it. You must pay it back within 7 years. And you can only spend that money on, and you've got to show receipts, you can only spend that money on feed. You can't spend that money on replenishing stock. You cannot spend that money even on fuel for your trucks to go and get the feed.
Well, to show you how much of a joke that is, I can go and buy a $100,000 Toyota Land Cruiser on 1% interest, so I can get a low interest loan too, so it's no big deal. Interest rates are low anyway, so I don't see that as being any sort of assistance to them at all.
And you look at the billions of dollars we spend on foreign aid.
Well, yeah, and look, I think that's necessary as it is, but I think...
But doesn't charity start at home?
Well, it does, but I think, you know, we've been the lucky country for so long, and I think that we haven't been the smart country for a long time. We've just relied on our luck a lot. And and I just, listening to your comments about, you know, harvesting water and all that sort of stuff, and I'm not too sure of the exact dates, but it was around about the turn of last century. A fellow by the name of C.Y. O'Connor, now that's a name people in Western Australia will be very familiar with. He suggested the construction of a pipeline from Perth to Kalgoorlie to the goldfields.
Yeah.
And everyone thought he was nuts. And they ridiculed him. But he managed to get the pipeline built and committed suicide before its completion because he couldn't deal with the criticism. Now, that pipeline is still in use today. And that's around about 600 kilometres, you know.
So wow.
It supplies water to...
What's his name?
C.Y. O'Connor.
Steve?
It's a very interesting story.
Say it again slowly.
Steve, for Charlie, Y for Yankee, O'Connor. I don't know what the C and the Y stand for.
C-Y O'Connor, and he built a pipeline in Western Australia.
From Perth to Kalgoorlie to provide water to the gold fields.
Do you know how much it cost?
I don't know.
I'll look it up. We'll find it.
You look it up. But my point is that over 100 years ago, they can build a pipeline that is still in use today.
Mm.
With today's technology, and if ever you've been up to the Kimberley region of WA, I'm not from over there, I'm from Sydney, but if ever you have a look at Lake Argyle there at Kununurra where they dammed the Ord River, it's something like 16 times the size of Sydney Harbour. And, that was an area that was supposedly going to be very productive for agriculture, the Ord River irrigation, and I think they had a few hiccups and so forth. But the amount of water, you've got the Ord River and the Fitzroy River, the Fitzroy is not dammed, but that water, I mean, it's providing a home for crocodiles. That's about all it's good for at the moment.
Yeah.
Why we can't, we can build railway lines from Adelaide to Darwin. Why can't we build an inland water pipeline?
I've been saying this. I've been saying it. What year was it built?
I think it was the turn of last century, the early 1900s.
Wow. And it's 600 kilometres long.
Correct.
And does it leak?
I think it does sometimes because there are signs along the pipeline asking people to report any leaks. But they maintain it. It's quite a large pipeline. It's above ground and it has pumping stations along the way. That's about as much as I know about it. But other than it's there and it provides water to, that very important area of Kalgoorlie and the Goldfields.
Okay, now Nat's just looked it up. It's called the Goldfields Water Supply Scheme.
There you go.
I'll do some more research. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just very quickly. You talk about just something that the people living in the major cities might be envious of. I've just passed through Orange. Now I know you know that area pretty well. Talking about decentralisation, there's a huge billboard just on the outskirts of Orange. You can buy a 700 square metre block of land here for $135,000 and a brand new 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom house for around $400,000. We need to give incentives for people to move out of these areas.
Well, you're talking about that area, which is the central west of New South Wales. They opened up what was called the Central West Triangle many years ago, in the late 70s. It was Neville Rand's idea. And it was the triangle being Orange, Bathurst and Blaney. And they moved the Central Mapping Authority to Bathurst, which was a New South Wales government department. And that was pretty successful, from what I understand. But you've got to remember, both Orange and Bathurst have a great water supply in Lake Burrinjuck and Chifley Dam.
So, yeah, they do.
And the Bathurst City Council many, many years ago showed enormous foresight and they did a deal in conjunction with the state government and they raised the wall and they've protected their water supply for some years to come. But Warragamba Dam, when it was built to supply Sydney had a population back then of probably 1.5 million.
Yeah.
And they won't allow them, the greenies won't allow them to raise the wall because of an endangered frog or something.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Anyway, John, great to talk to you, mate. Great information. And here we are. Charles, do you want to know what his initials stand for?
Yeah, go for it.
Yelverton, Yelverton. Charles Yelverton O'Connor.
Right. Born, it doesn't have the year there. Was it around the turn of the century?
I'm getting to you, mate. You are spot on. If you are a mastermind, this should be your special subject. He was born on the 11th of January, 1843. He died 10th of March, 1902. An Irish engineer, best known for his work in Western Australia, especially for construction of Fremantle Harbour, thought to be impossible, and the Goldfields Water Supply Scheme. How's that?
Yeah, and I'm sure we have people that are capable of doing similar things today with the right support and, government support and that sort of stuff. And I don't know how we go about getting stuff like that done. It's just it's beyond belief that it gets to this point where these farmers are struggling like they are. So.
Okay, now.
Anyway.
Now, what this guy did was that he could see the population explosion in the desert because of the gold, right?
Yep.
So what he did was he introduced to the Western Australian Parliament a bill to authorise the raising of a loan. Now, back in 1896 when he did this, do you know how much he raised? They borrowed, this would, I would hate to think what in today's money it would be, $2.5 million, or £2.5 million.
Right, yeah.
To construct the scheme, the pipeline pumps 5 million imperial gallons, which is 23,000 metres squared, of, yeah, of water per day to the goldfields from a dam on the Helena River. Right. Near the Mundaring, yeah, Weir near Perth.
Yeah, five, that supplies Perth, I think, with water as well, that weir. So, yeah.
530 kilometres long, 30 inch, 760 millimetres in diameter, and there you, yep, go.
There you go.
There you go. All right.
They could do things like that at the turn of last century, and, you know, we struggle to get stuff like that done today.
What an interesting caller you are, John. Thank you so much.
Good on you. Thanks, Luke.
Okay, call back any time. The night's... G'day, Greg.
G'day. How you going, Luke?
Good, thank you.
That's the way. You're talking about Hudson with an H.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. It was my grandfather that done the ad.
No.
Yeah, it was. Billy Kearns, mate.
But Billy Kearns.
That's him.
And it was a John Singleton ad.
Yeah, it was.
I'm pretty sure it was Singo's agency back in the 70s.
That was, mate. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was a comedian, my grandfather. He won a Mo Award. Yeah, yeah, he was famous back in the day. He was on the Mike Walsh show, and, yeah, he was what they called a coin comic, mate. Didn't swear. Yeah.
And he was the guy.
He was.
Billy Kerr.
That's it.
And it was, and Hudson's were a hardware chain.
They were, yeah. They sold timber and, yeah, Hudson's with an H. They had an old Flintstone car.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had they used to have Hudson H in Sydney with like a Flintstone car out the front with Hudson with an H.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm writing that he wore a flannelette shirt with overalls.
He did. And a hat.
And a hat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hudson. Hudson with an H.
That's it.
And that was about the same time as Singo did Where Do You Get It?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was only a kid when he done the ad.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, so I'm 51 now, so, but yeah, I was only a kid. When he done all them.
Yeah, wow. So, and did you know him well?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He died when I was probably about 11, so probably about 40 years ago he died, passed away.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Did you know him well, though?
Yeah, 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 yeah. He bought me my first Cronulla jumper, so, mate, when I was 4 years old, and that's why I follow the Sharks, mad Shark supporter.
There you are.
He lived at Cronulla, but he was a South supporter.
Well, there you are.
Yeah, you know, one red eye, one green eye.
There you go. Thank you so much. Great that you could ring in. It's a small world, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah, good on you, Greg.
All right, thanks, Luke.
No, thank you. But
have a good night.
Yeah, I'm going to look him up. What was his name?
Billy Kearns.
Billy Kearns.
K-E-A-R-N-S.
K?
K-E-A... R-N-S.
And he used to go on the Mike Walsh show.
Yeah, he was on the Mike Walsh show. Yeah, and he was on Celebrity Squares, I think it was. Yeah, he's on a few TV shows, so yeah.
All right, well done. Thank you, Greg.
It's all right. Cheers, Luke.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye. The Night Shift, Triple M. Rob is listening to us on the net in Florida in the United States, joins us now. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Luke Bonner. How you doing, buddy?
I'm going very well. Welcome to Australia. Welcome to the Triple M Network.
I was proud to be here. It's been a while to get here, but here I am.
What time is it there?
But, what time is it here? It's 9:30 Monday morning on the job. I'm a tradie. We build stuff. So.
Good on you. So why are you choosing the Triple M night shift as your morning radio program in Florida? I'm very flattered, but how did you find us? Tell me.
I found you on the Simple M radio app, I think it was. I always wanted to go to Australia. I'm just a poor old redneck bogan, I guess you call them over there. But I always wanted to go to Australia, so I try to figure out how to speak Australian and be a faux Aussie, and you know.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a lesson. You ready?
Anyhow, go ahead.
Okay, I want you to say, "G'day, mate. How you going?"
G'day, mate. The reason I'm ringing up here today is to talk to you a little bit about dickheads.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. You've been practicing.
Well, I do a community theatre.
Bit of community theatre. Well, that's very good. You've done very, very well. So you're a tradie, 9:30 in the morning in Florida, and you're listening to Triple M. That'll just about do me. What did you want to talk about, Rob? There's a lot I want to talk to you about. I want to ask you, what's America saying about Donald Trump? He's making headlines over here and around the world. Do they talk about him much over where you are, amongst your friends?
Well, here's the deal on Trump. Either you love him or you hate him.
Yeah.
You know, depends on what part of the country you live in. We have a lot of blue states, which are conservative Republican, and a lot of Democratic states, which are blue Democratic states, and red states are the Republican, right? And, you know, a lot of rednecks favor him, and that's usually who follows him around is the conservative bunch. And liberals hate him because he just doesn't take any shit, you know. He says he's going to do what he's going to do, and he does it. It may take him a while to get there, but he'll do it. I don't know about that wall situation, but the Mexicans I work with over here said, shit, no, senor, we're not building shit.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Yes, this wall that he reckons Mexico is going to build, that's an interesting one. But as I say, I've said it many times, you show me a 20-foot wall, and I'll show you a 21-foot ladder.
Or you'll see a shovel leaning up against it. You know, they find tunnels on the wall, and you know, down in South Texas all the time. Yeah. It all depends on what sheriff you can get to pay off. You know, it's a racket. You know, it's just like anything else. You find a woman, you're going to find a woman that does something for money. You know, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, you'll either find a ladder up against the wall or a shovel underneath it. It's very funny. You wanted to talk about alcohol at sporting events. Do you have the same problem in America?
We do to an extent. We have what's called Pee Wee football and junior varsity football and varsity, which would be high school. People, they don't sell alcohol because it's against the law to have alcohol on school premises, which most of these venues take place at. But people smuggle it in. You know, they bring it in their old age purse or, you know, in a trench coat, whatever they got to do to get a bottle of Jack Daniels into the door, and they'll get pissy right there in the bleachers. You know, they'll be, you know, hurling shit at the refs and, you know, stuff like that, just thinking an ass to themselves. And it's where you don't even want to go to things like that. I'm sure it's like that everywhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, we watch a lot of American sport now here in Australia, and you look at the crowd, and you know, they've got great big cups of beer. That beer that is sold at the NFL or at the baseball, is that full strength or is that light beer?
It varies. You can get light or a 6.0 or a lager, which is a 6.0, or you can get a 12-point, you know. It's whatever, but the stuff's not free. It's like, you know, $12, $13 a cup. You know, 8-ounce cup. Who the hell can afford a drink at a sporting event?
Well, yeah, that's right. Food and drink is not cheap here either. I love it at American sporting events. You've got those great big turkey legs. You should see them. A huge Fred Flintstone type things. They've taken over from hot dogs.
That's right. Nobody eats hot dogs. I don't know what people are eating. You know, a lot of burritos, things like that. But I don't go to sporting events because I'm always working.
Yeah, but when you come to Australia, what you've got to do, Rob, is you've got to have a meat pie, okay?
Right, yeah, meat pie, yeah.
You've got to have a meat pie with sauce, tomato sauce. You call it ketchup.
What? Ketchup, that's right, ketchup. What's in a meat pie, kangaroo or what?
Oh, it can be, but usually it's just beef mince and a bit of gravy, but there are all sorts of pies. There are all sorts of pies now, but your basic pie is beef mince and gravy. And it's a round pie usually, and you eat it, and it dribbles all over your hand, and it goes down your wrist onto your watch, and that's what we do.
That sounds infatuating.
It is. It is sensational. We are a cultured mob over here. Some people put kangaroo. We eat emu and kangaroo. We eat our coat of arms. Do you like that?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I heard goanna tastes like shit. I don't know.
No, I've eaten goanna. Goanna's all right. I've got a word of warning.
Bush tucker.
Yeah, that's it, bush tucker. A word of warning for you, Rob.
Right.
When you come to Australia, I just need to let you know that if it can kill you, we have it. We have all sorts of... We have the world's deadliest snakes. We have box jellyfish that can kill you. Irukandji, which are tiny little jellyfish that you can't even see the size of your thumbnail. They'll kill you. We have crocodiles. We have great white sharks. You name it. If it can kill you, we own it.
You make a wonderful motivational speaker, sir.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So if you're after a life of adventure and adrenaline, we're the place to come to. But we're also a very generous mob, and we would welcome you with open arms.
Yeah, I'd love to get over one day and just kind of, you know, just tour around, go see Uluru, things like that, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. You see, you've done your homework. You go and see Uluru. That is a magical place. Magical place. Listen, Rob, nice to know that you're listening to us in Florida in the United States at 9:30. Well, it's now 20 to 10 where you are in the morning. Thank you very much for your call, and be a regular. Call back anytime.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate it.